Welcome to another episode of How Did So-Called Progressive Politics Become So Regressive? The podcast that says it's okay to believe in free speech and democracy, and it's also okay to disagree with leftist populist ideologies. Today, I'll be talking about some of the principles of democracy. We're living through times of increasing anger and intolerance. This series is about bringing people back together by embracing democratic principles. Modern so-called progressives seem to mix a lot of censorship and silencing of opposition to create exclusive rights for certain select minorities while branding this inclusive, when it's really exclusive because you're excluding the majority from these privileges. So let's talk about the principles of democracy. The basics are simple. Democracy creates equality by giving every eligible person one vote. So the first simple idea is that everyone should be given a voice. They're allowed to participate with an equal vote in a free democratic process. Freedom of speech must be protected because if people are silenced, then they're being denied a voice. So they can't be persecuted for challenging the system, because in that way, democracy cannot survive because there is inequality if some people are denied the right to assert their opinion. Governments and organizations cannot be held to account unless citizens have the right to criticize them and vote against them if they choose. So freedom of speech is an absolute necessity in a democracy to hold governance to account, and accountability is a central democratic principle to prevent abuse of power. So what works in democracy? It's belief, winning the hearts and minds of the people. So most people in Western democracies don't need to be forced to support democracy. They have good quality of life, they feel part of something, and so they are supporters of democracy. If people believe in a system, they're willing to fight for it. They're willing to fight for each other and for the greater good. And I'll give you a really good example. If you were to go to a local high school and try and force kids to participate in karate, they'd hate you. If you just turned up and said, start running around the hall and, you know, punching and blocking for hours and hours, they'd be very resentful. But if a child willingly joins karate, invests in it, participates in it, they're happy to train incredibly hard. They'll turn up for 2, 3, 4, 5 hours a week training, and they will love what they're doing. So humans hate being forced to do things, and that's all about a principle in business we called stakeholder engagement. That if you want to make any endeavor involving a group successful, you want to give people a voice, involve them, listen to their opinions, make them feel valued, hear their concerns, and bring them together so that they can engage with each other. Then they start to see the humanity in each other. They fight less. They're invested in a process together, and they believe they can make a positive difference. They build relationships with other people, and they recognize that different people have different valid concerns. Everyone starts to care more about each other and the system. And even if stakeholder engagement doesn't work, within a democracy, we are enabled to present arguments to the public, and people can vote for the system that they prefer. One person, one vote, everyone has the right to challenge and promote their ideology. It's supposed to be engaging, not disengaging. So I'll give you a really good example of how things are going wrong now. So my son was asked to do an opinion piece in class at school, and the teacher would not allow any of the children to speak about any ideology unless it was a populist idea on ideology. So modern sort of radical left ideas were allowed, and if you wanted to speak out against that, then the children were banned from presenting their topic. The problem with this is that even if you believe in populist ideologies, when you ban children from speaking about topics that they're interested in, you just make them angry and resentful. You're not going to change their beliefs. So what you'd rather do is let them present on the topic and then challenge them. Talk about what they're getting wrong. Ask them how their views would make someone else feel. Let other children say to them, hey, that would make me feel bad if you felt that way. That's the way to induce dialogue and to change the way people think, not banning and persecuting people who disagree with you. And the problem with this kind of system is that nobody can speak out. There's no right of reply. Parents are too scared. The school cannot push back because it's politically incorrect. And the silent majority is too afraid of persecution, losing their reputations and livelihood. So woke individuals experience the glorious satisfaction of power, which is a total rush for all humans. They can destroy opposition, they can win because nobody can fight back, and they get lots of affirmation and praise from other woke people. They're brave and they're moral, but really they're just bullies who are enforcing their opinions on others and taking advantage of society's momentary lapse of reason. Give a small-minded person power without accountability, and you're usually going to get abuse of power as a consequence. So what is the reason for the emergence of woke philosophies? I think certainly one aspect of it is that we've drifted into being a much more narcissistic society. People care so much about their own feelings, and they are preoccupied with how they feel at the expense of the greater good. But there's also an element of control. So if a fringe or extremist minority group wants to seize power in a democracy, it is difficult to do so by democratic means because minority interests will be overruled by the majority. So the only way for a minority interest group to take control is to subjugate or overthrow the democratic process. And they can do that by force or by subterfuge. So one way they can achieve this is to convince the majority that the system itself is so rotten that it must be overthrown, and that the democratic process cannot be trusted because it is run by xenophobes who do not have the interests of the population at heart. So if they can destroy faith in nationalism, and they can destroy people's belief in the system, then they can destroy the system from within. And sadly, I don't believe that many young people in Western democracies today truly believe that democracy is worth fighting for. So if we had another D-Day, I don't think there would be a lot of young people running up the beach to fight the Nazi Germans, because people have been so battered down by guilt trips and by everyone else's victimhood that people don't feel good about democracy anymore and they don't want to defend it. This seems to be working very well in the United States, where you have a lot of white liberals buying into the notion that America is by nature an evil country, and they support the eradication of democracy from within, and everyone is made to feel good about that. This overall strategy, as employed by the radical left, is to create powerful propaganda that can masquerade as moral tolerance while encouraging the destruction of the democratic process from within and convincing the population that this is the path to salvation and righteousness. This is nothing new, and it's a strategy that was used by organized religion in the past to maintain political power. We are the force of morality and tolerance, so opposing us brands you as evil, and you become a pariah. So with this, we see the reemergence of a culture of totalitarianism, censorship, and McCarthyism being portrayed as morality and tolerance. This is a brilliant propaganda ploy because it casts the system itself as immoral. So anyone who argues for the maintenance of democratic principles can be persecuted as an evil opponent of the necessary revolution. So you must agree that you are an evil xenophobe. Therefore, your opinions don't count because you're an evil xenophobe. If you disagree and don't think you're an evil xenophobe, that makes you even worse because you refuse to recognize your problem. So your opinions still don't count. Hence, we have terms like discrimination and hate speech being bandied about when all they represent is disagreement. So according to this kind of view, the only way society can thrive is by persecuting your immorality and getting rid of your evil influence. Sounds a bit like Nazi Germany, doesn't it? If we just get rid of the Jews, or in this case, inconvenient critical thinkers who support the democratic process, then we'll all have utopia. Thus, we have returned to a culture of mobs lynching witches again. If the witches protest, that makes them even worse because they will not acknowledge that their devil worship is an evil and they will not repent. So we throw them into the water. If they sink and drown, that's okay, we've got rid of them. But if they float, we stone them to death. So you can see the parallel here. Humans don't change. We are, as a species, addicted to power and control. And the best way to achieve this is to destroy inconvenient opposition. Now, woke's worst kind of opponents are those who wield logic and facts. So the way we can get around that and deal with that is by simply canceling logic and facts and creating a world that is based only on subjective feelings. So anyone who wants to use propaganda must discredit rationality and evidence, or the propaganda will fail. Again, this is a brilliant propaganda play because anyone who argues is a bad person. They're a racist, a sexist, a transphobe. And any rational argument can't be used publicly because it's labeled discrimination and hate speech. So woke can cancel opposition, defeat any reasonable objection, and thereby seize control of the silent majority who are now too scared to speak out for fear of being persecuted and labeled. Of course, truth is quite the discriminator because it discriminates against nonsense and illogical propaganda. But truth itself isn't propaganda. It can be misused as propaganda, but the truth itself is not propaganda. Incidentally, it's also not discrimination or hate speech, but we'll deal with that later. The problem for democracy is that we can't promote free speech and accountability if we ban inconvenient truths and opinions. It's undemocratic to move towards state-prescribed ideologies, which we are doing now, because that creates a situation where people cannot challenge the government and hold it to account. If the government chooses one specific opinion and legislates it, then anyone who argues can be cancelled or banned. So then there is no freedom of speech or accountability. We have seen from history that McCarthyism never leads to a good place. In retrospect, everyone regrets the cruelty of persecuting people based on their beliefs. How could we allow this to happen in a modern society? But it doesn't compensate those who have suffered. So we can't stand idly by and pretend that we won't be affected. Compromising democracy puts everyone and everything at risk, including the freedom and quality of life we all take for granted. A gift from, you guessed it, Western democracy. Because the point of democracy is to hold governance and power to account, when we are dealing with any fashionable ideology, we cannot create inequality and maintain fairness. These concepts cannot coexist, so no minority group can claim a monopoly on the truth, whether they've suffered or not. Victimhood does not override democratic principles. You can't maintain democracy and fairness with totalitarianism. Incidentally, victimhood and guilt trips are terrible building blocks for a united society, but I'll cover that in later lectures. Democracy demands that people maintain right of reply and the ability to challenge ideologies that they don't agree with, to hold everyone to account. Democracy should not be troubled by offensive opinions. If anything, people making offensive statements about systems and governments encourages the notion that democracy is alive and well. When someone holds a strong opinion, they often feel emotionally invested. So if someone disagrees, they might become offended. If we promote the idea that we cannot offend other people, then we have a problem because everyone has a different opinion and most people are offended by conflicting opinions. So when we have two different opinions that offend each other, which one do we ban? Must the government step in and legislate the correct way to think, the correct ideology? We do see this happening at the moment, but it is clearly in opposition to democratic principles. Once you empower one opinion, you silence others and you remove their voice so they can no longer participate in the democratic process. It's counterintuitive for democracy to ban democratic debate and create official state ideology because this creates inequality and exclusiveness. Now, offensiveness should actually go both ways. So many more conservative folk are offended by woke ideology and vice versa. Yet the current fashion is that it's okay for woke to offend others, but as soon as they deploy the line, the woke people deploy the line, I consider this discriminatory. Then everyone runs away in fear and trepidation. I personally find racism against white people, the term rape culture, and the presumption that men are toxic to be offensive. There are definitely women who feel offended by having to compete in sport against male physical advantage. Or having naked male body parts in their safe spaces. So tolerance has to go both ways. We must talk about these important, complex societal issues together to ensure tolerance and engagement. How can we ensure that everyone is heard if we silence people? Yes, it's not inclusive to ban people's genuine concerns because you don't share them. It makes people angry and resentful, so it just doesn't work as a political construct to create a united, happy society. So democracy protects the right of people to hold offensive opinions, disagree and state these views publicly. If we allow this to be eroded, it puts everyone at risk of persecution. After all, whose beliefs will get banned next? Maybe yours. In the next episode, I'll talk about how we can maintain freedom of speech and accountability while protecting people from discrimination and hate speech. If you enjoyed this podcast, please feel free to follow me and share it with your friends. And join me for the next episode of How Did So-Called Progressive Politics Become So Regressive? Please note that the views and opinions on this show are my own and do not reflect those of my colleagues or employers.